All right, everyone, welcome back to the Lex Plug Podcast for another deep dive into some fascinating case law. And today we're tackling a case that should really make any aspiring Florida lawyer's ears perk up.
Yeah, this one's a biggie.
It is. It's all about when the governor can flex that veto power.
Oh, yeah, that veto pen.
And potentially even rewrite the law. We're talking about the 1990 Florida Supreme Court case, Florida House of Representatives versus Martinez.
A classic.
A true classic, but, and one that really lays down the law on executive power over the state budget.
You know, it's fascinating how this case boils down to such a fundamental question.
What's that?
When the legislature creates a budget, right?
Right.
And the governor gets that power to say no.
Uh-huh.
How far does that no actually reach? Can they just nix a little bit here and there?
Like a little budget surgery.
Exactly, like a scalpel, or do they have to take the whole thing or leave it?
Or like a hatchet.
Yeah, a hatchet. That's a great way to put it.
It's a question of balance, you know? Yeah. That tension between legislative intent and executive power.
Separation of powers 101.
Exactly. And that's why this case, Florida House versus Martinez, is so crucial for you future lawyers out there. Understanding the limits of this veto power, what the governor can and cannot do, it's essential for really grasping the whole dance of power in Florida's budget process.
Who really controls the purse strings?
You right, know. Right. Who gets the final say?
Right. Yeah.
So our mission today, folks, is to dissect those constitutional limits on the governor's veto authority. Can they veto just parts of a budget allocation?
Like pull out a few threads?
A condition here, a funding source there, or is it a package deal?
All or nothing.
Yeah, all or nothing when it comes to each appropriation.
That's what Martinez really clarifies for us.
It does. It's a fascinating roadmap of how legislative intent bumps up against executive power in Florida's budget process.
It's a good one.
It is. And for this deep dive, we're going straight to the source. We're pulling directly from the Florida Supreme Court's opinion in Florida House of Representatives versus Martinez.
The justices laid it all out for us.
They did. Facts, legal reasoning, lasting impact, the whole nine yards. So buckle up, everybody, because we're about to break down a landmark decision. All right, so to set the stage, let's rewind back to 1988.
Back in the day.
Florida's budget is on the table. And then Governor Martinez, well, he basically drops the veto hammer.
He wasn't messing around.
No, he was not over 150 line item vetoes.
Wow.
But here's where things get really interesting.
Okay, I'm listening.
He wasn't just vetoing entire funding lines.
Mm-hmm.
He was going after specific conditions attached to appropriations, like those little butts the legislature tacks on.
Ah, the proviso language.
Exactly. Trying to trim parts of appropriations.
Old move.
Super bold. So picture this, right? The legislature says, okay, here's the money, but you can only use it for this specific purpose.
Right.
Or here's the funding, but we need you to hit these performance targets.
Uh-huh.
And the governor is basically like, I like the money going there, but not with those strings attached.
Yeah.
Or I'll take 80% of this funding, but not the full amount.
He's trying to micromanage.
Right. He's trying to tailor the budget to his liking. And, well, the Florida House of Representatives, they were not having it.
They were like, hold up.
Big time. They felt like the governor had overstepped his constitutional authority.
Yeah. You can't just rewrite the budget like that.
Right. Their argument was he's essentially trying to amend the budget line by line, which is the legislature's job, not his.
Totally.
So they took him to court.
The lawsuit time.
They actually first sought a writ of mandamus.
Which is basically,
it's like a court order telling the governor to reverse those vetoes.
Right. Like, hey, you got to undo this.
Exactly. But the Florida Supreme Court, they said, whoa, hold on. Go to the circuit court first.
Start at the beginning.
Right. Got to follow the proper channels.
Yeah.
So down to the circuit court they went. And guess what?
What happened?
The circuit court sided with the legislature.
They agreed with the houses.
They did. They said those partial vetoes, you know, trying to slice and dice the appropriations, they were unconstitutional.
Ooh, that's a big deal.
Huge deal. This is Florida's budget we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The whole state government hinges on this.
Right. The mechanics of the budget process, everything's at stake.
So what did the governor do?
Well, he appealed, of course.
Makes sense.
But here's the thing. Because this issue was so important.
I mean, we're talking about the balance of power here.
Exactly. It was deemed a matter of great public importance under the Florida Constitution.
Huh?
So the case skipped the usual step of going to the District Court of Appeal.
Fast track.
Straight to the Florida Supreme Court.
Wow, straight to the top.
Top dogs had to weigh in on this veto showdown. It just goes to show you how significant this question of the governor's veto power really is.
Yeah, this is like constitutional law 101.
It is, and it all came down to this one key question.
All right, lay on me.
what exactly is a specific appropriation? Because that's what the governor is allowed to veto, right?
According to the Florida Constitution.
Right. But defining that term, that's where things get tricky.
I bet.
So the Florida Supreme Court, they looked back at a previous case.
Precedent.
Yeah, Brown versus Firestone. And they said, a specific appropriation. It's got to be an identifiable, integrated fund allocated for a specific purpose.
So basically a clearly defined chunk of money with a clear purpose.
Exactly like the court was saying, look, we can't let the governor just use the veto pen like a scalpel.
Right, going in and making all these tiny little cuts.
Right, and rewriting the legislature's intent. They wanted it to be more, like you said, a hatchet. You either reject the whole thing or you accept the whole thing.
No picking and choosing.
No in between.
So that definition became the litmus test for all these vetoes.
It did. It was the measuring stick.
Okay, so let's see how this hatchet principle actually played out.
Let's do it. Let's dive into some real world examples.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with veto number one.
Veto number one.
Governor Martinez, he tried to strike down salary adjustments for employees in the Department of Agriculture.
Interesting.
What happened there?
Well, the court took a look at it and they said, nope, that veto is invalid. Because those salary adjustments weren't a standalone fund, you know?
Right.
It wasn't like the legislature created a separate line item that just said salary adjustments X dollars.
Right.
It was all part of the larger pot of money for the Department of Agriculture's personnel expenses.
So the governor couldn't just isolate those salary adjustments?
No, it's like you can't just veto the sugar in a cake recipe without vetoing the whole cake.
Exactly. The sugar is part of the cake.
It's all integrated.
Right. It doesn't meet that Brown versus Firestone definition of a specific appropriation.
You got to take the whole thing or leave it.
Okay. So veto number one struck down. Let's move on to veto number five.
All right. Veto number five. What did the governor try to do there?
This one's interesting. He went after the funding source for a particular study.
The funding source?
Yeah, but he didn't veto the study itself.
Hmm. So he was trying to cut off the money supply but keep the study alive?
Exactly. Can you imagine? Seems a little tricky.
Super tricky. And the court was like, no way.
They shut that down. They said you can't just eliminate where the money's coming from and expect the thing it's funding to keep going.
It's like cutting the fuel line to a car.
Right. And expecting it to still run.
But the car still exists.
The car still exists, but it's going nowhere. So they made this really important distinction between the funding source and the appropriation itself.
Okay, that makes sense.
So the legislature had allocated a certain amount for this study, right?
Right.
And they'd said, okay, this money is coming from this specific account. But the governor can't just veto that source and leave the rest of the study's funding untouched. Because the appropriation itself is for the study.
Right.
That's the identifiable integrated fund allocated for a specific purpose.
The funding source is just a detail.
It's a means to an end.
Got it. So yeah. Veto number five, another one bites the dust.
Down it goes. Now veto number six.
All right. What do you try with this one?
This one targeted a $455,000 study related to geographic information systems, or GIS.
GIS. Okay.
And this one actually gets a little complicated. So initially, the governor tried to eliminate the whole study.
The whole $455,000? Gone.
Gone. But then it was later conceded as valid.
So he got to veto the whole study?
The whole appropriation was gone. But here's the twist.
Okay, there's a twist.
Even though the study itself was vetoed, the court said, hold on.
Wait a minute.
You can't also veto the provisos attached to it.
The provisos.
Those specific conditions and restrictions the legislature had added.
So even though the funding was gone, he couldn't touch those extra rules.
Exactly, because those provisos were part of the legislature's intent. They're saying, here's the money for this study, but it needs to focus on these specific areas.
Right.
And maybe report back to us by this date. So even though the money was gone, the governor couldn't just pick apart those buts.
Interesting. So he could veto the tree, but not prune the branches.
Exactly. Really reinforces that all or nothing concept.
The veto power isn't about editing. It's about accepting or rejecting.
Whole package deal.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, what about vetoes 3, 4, and part of 7?
Wow. Those are interesting ones, too.
What happened there?
They all involved vetoing specific funding sources again.
Okay, so going after where the money's coming from.
But without vetoing the entire program, those funds were supposed to support.
So like saying, I don't like that you're using this trust fund for this program.
Right, but I'm not going to veto the program itself.
Hmm. And what did the court say about that?
Well, they basically applied the same logic as veto number five.
The fuel line analogy?
Exactly. You can't veto the means without vetoing the end. So in one of those vetoes, the legislature had appropriated money for environmental protection.
Okay.
And they said some of that money will come from general tax revenue. and some will come from a specific environmental trust fund.
Okay, makes sense.
But the governor tried to just eliminate the trust fund contribution.
But leave the rest of the environmental funding intact.
Right, but the court said no dice.
Nope.
You get to veto the entire appropriation for the environmental program.
The whole enchilada.
If you want to veto any of it.
Because that's the specific appropriation.
That's the thing being funded.
The whole environmental program.
All right, so we've seen a bunch of vetoes get shot down.
Yeah, the governor was swinging and missing.
He was, but there was one veto that actually survived.
Oh, there was?
Yeah, veto number two.
What was so special about that one?
This one dealt with a $3.9 million appropriation for Florida First Start.
Florida First Start, okay.
And the court said this one's legit.
Why?
Because it passed that Brown versus Firestone test.
It was a clearly defined chunk of money.
Yeah, exactly. It was an identifiable integrated fund with a very specific purpose, the Florida First Start program. So the governor could veto the whole thing.
Because it fit the definition.
Because it was a true specific appropriation.
So it seems like the key is whether the legislature created a really distinct pot of money for a specific purpose.
That's the magic formula.
If they do, the governor can veto it all or nothing.
But if it's not a separate distinct pot of money, then the governor can't start picking and choosing. But here's another interesting wrinkle.
Oh, there's more.
Always more with the law, right?
Right.
The justices on the Florida Supreme Court weren't all in total agreement.
They weren't all on the same page.
Not exactly. They all agreed on the final outcome. But they had some different thoughts on how they got there.
Nuances.
Nuances.
Right.
Yeah. So Justice McDonald, for example, he agreed with most of the veto decisions. But he had a slightly different take on vetoing funding sources.
How so?
He thought it should be okay to veto a funding source if it's really, really specifically tied to a single purpose.
Like if it's super obvious that this money from this source is only for this one thing.
Exactly. Like if the legislature basically earmarks money from a specific source for a very narrow use.
Okay. I see.
Then maybe the governor should be able to veto just that funding source.
So it's almost like a if it walks like a duck kind of argument.
Right, exactly. It's like, well, if it really looks and acts like a specific appropriation.
Even if it's technically just a funding source.
Maybe we should treat it that way.
That's interesting.
It shows you how those lines can get a little blurry. And then Justice Grimes, he also had a partial dissent.
He disagreed with the majority on some points.
He did. He thought those vetoes that targeted specific funding sources.
Vetoes 3, 4, and 7.
Those ones he thought they were actually valid.
Even though the majority said they weren't.
Right. His reasoning was that even though the money came from different sources.
Like different accounts or funds.
The legislature had listed them as separate line items in the budget. And each line item had a specific purpose.
So in his view, the legislature had basically created multiple specific appropriations.
Even within a larger program.
So the governor should be able to veto each of those line items individually.
Right. So you see how even the legal experts, the Supreme Court justices themselves, they were grappling with the nuances of what defines a specific appropriation.
It's not always so clear-cut.
Not at all. And it really highlights how important the legislature's wording is.
When they write the budget.
When they draft those appropriation bills. The more clearly and distinctly they lay out those funding allocations and their purposes, the stronger their case is going to be.
If there's a veto challenge.
Exactly, because any ambiguity opens the door for legal battles.
Yeah.
And different interpretations.
And potentially vetoes that could really undermine what they were trying to do.
Right. So it's a lesson for both sides. Legislators got to be crystal clear. And the governor has to be careful not to overreach. But at the heart of it all is this fundamental constitutional principle.
And that is?
The veto power is a negative power.
What does that mean exactly?
It means the governor can nullify something.
Say no to it.
Exactly. But they can't change it. They can't alter the legislature's intent.
It's like a referee, not a coach.
I like that they can blow the whistle, but they can't redraw the plays. And that's a crucial distinction because it really protects the legislature's role.
In setting the state's budget.
In shaping the state's agenda through its spending priorities.
They hold the purse strings.
They do. And this ruling in Martinez prevents the governor from just coming in and imposing their own vision.
It's about checks and balances.
Exactly. It's about maintaining that separation of powers.
Yeah.
So what are the key takeaways for all you aspiring lawyers out there?
What should we be walking away with from Martinez?
The biggest one, the most important rule is, governors in Florida can only veto entire specific appropriations.
The whole thing. No picking and choosing.
No picking and choosing, as we've seen. They can't veto just a funding source. Or just a specific condition or restriction.
Yeah.
They have to accept or reject the entire appropriation.
It's a whole package deal.
Exactly. That clearly defined chunk of money allocated for a specific purpose.
And this has a huge impact on how the legislature has to approach drafting the budget.
Oh, absolutely. They got to be thinking about Martinez every step of the way. They need to be super precise and clear.
No ambiguity.
No ambiguity, because if they want to protect certain aspects of a program,
in a funding mechanism or a specific condition,
they got to make sure each appropriation is totally distinct.
It's got to stand on its own.
It can't just be part of a larger allocation.
Because that's when the governor can step in and veto the whole thing.
And for the governor and their team, this case basically tells them, hey, you can't use the veto pen to micromanage the legislature's decisions.
It's a blunt instrument, not a scalpel.
Exactly. So they have to think strategically.
Yeah.
They got to weigh the pros and cons of vetoing a whole appropriation because they might lose valuable funding for something they actually support.
Right.
Just because they don't like one small part of it.
It's a tough choice.
It is. It's all about strategy and understanding those limitations.
So really, when we zoom out and look at the big picture, Martinez is a powerful example of the separation of powers in action.
It is. It reinforces the legislature's power of the purse. And it limits the governor's ability to unilaterally change budget policies. It's all about maintaining that balance.
Like we were saying earlier.
And here's a simple analogy to help you remember this.
Okay, I love analogies.
The governor can't just cross out half a sentence in the budget any more than a student can veto part of a professor's exam question.
Haha, right. You can't just answer the parts you like.
You either answer the whole question or you skip it.
No partial credit.
No partial credit. So, sum it all up. Florida House versus Martinez is a landmark case.
It's a must-know for any Florida lawyer.
It really sets the standard for understanding how far the governor's veto power extends.
Especially when it comes to budget appropriations.
And the big takeaway, the core principle here, is that the veto power is about saying no.
Not about rewriting.
It's not about the governor getting to reshape everything to their liking. It's about accepting or rejecting what the legislature has put forward. And that's a crucial concept for understanding how our government works.
It's all about that balance of power.
Now, before we wrap up, I want to leave you with a question to ponder.
Oh, a good one.
How do you think this Martinez case might actually influence the strategies of both the legislature and the governor in future budget negotiations?
That's interesting.
Because now they both know these very clear limitations on the veto power. So how might they approach their policy goals and their funding priorities differently?
Knowing that the governor can't just veto a tiny piece here and there.
It really changes the game, doesn't it?
It does. Food for thought.
And for all you legal eagles out there, I highly recommend checking out the full Martinez opinion.
It's a great read.
And you can also explore some related cases. Because this area of law is constantly evolving. And understanding the nuances of these separation of powers cases, it's essential for any lawyer in Florida.
It's foundational.
Absolutely. Because these principles, they come up everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll definitely be relevant throughout your legal career.
No matter what area of law you practice.
So keep those legal minds sharp, everyone. And we'll catch you next time on the Lex Plug Podcast.